Alright friends, we're going to start our webinar here. Welcome to this special event, the Arctic Wrap-Up. So all you folks who headed up to the Arctic this season or subarctic, getting back together one last time here as a subgroup of the 2013-14 cohort and getting to share what you've been up to. It's really nice for Janet and I to get to hear from you each on your post-field calls and in emails. But it's such a blessing to get a chance to talk to one another about what you've been up to and look for those places to collaborate and keep working together. So we'll probably have a couple people coming in throughout the webinar, so we'll just invite them in as we go. Your slides should be changing in the middle of the screen for the Blackboard Collaborate screen. So I've got kind of a picture of all the different pieces of it. You guys have done Polar Connect events and been on various events, so you probably know how this works. But just as a reminder, if you do want to like just type in the chat box, you're totally welcome to do that throughout the presentations. And if you want to raise your hand to ask a question, there's a little hand icon there right below your name. And a list of participants, and we don't have to use video today. It does sometimes kick people off the system if we all try and shuffle around with video, but at the end, maybe if you just can't help it and you want to wave hi, then we'll open that up to you. So if you have questions, again, just type them in the chat box if you want, and then raise your hand if you have a question or you want to comment. But really, it's just a chance for all of you to get to share with one another. In a short agenda, we'll just do a quick update on where the program's at and kind of the bigger scope of who your alumni are that you can lean on. We'll do reflections from teachers and researchers that are participating. And then if you guys have any needs or announcements that you want to make over time. So the next piece is just a quick look at all the Polar Trek teachers that have come before us and that we're already looking towards the future. So you can see that the Arctic, we've had a lot of folks that travel out to the Arctic. And you know Robbie Score works really hard to make sure all those folks have a wonderful opportunity and provided for while they're up there. In Antarctic folks, we're actually doing pretty well. We try to place 6 teachers in the Arctic and 6 in the Antarctic every year. And it's pretty clear that we're meeting that almost every year, and then Arctic has a few more. So we have, you guys are the last cohort that are part of this award we currently have. And the funding ends in March of 2014, but we have been funded for one more year, if you haven't heard yet. So we are in the middle of our selection process, and we have some great applicants from this year who are kind of right in the middle of all the interviews happening. I know, it's great news. So we've got a year's worth of funding, and we're looking towards the next year to probably reapply and our take on how we got 1 year versus, you know, more years. Is that NSF really likes the program and wants it to continue. And without having, so obviously, an immense amount of funding to share, they wanted to give us at least a year to allow us to continue on our cycle and not have a gap in the program. And we'll hopefully apply for more in the following year. So thanks for that support in the chat box. That's really nice of you. So that's a little bit about where we're at and where we've been. Kind of a picture of who also is part of your alumni group. Lots of middle school teachers, lots of high school teachers. We've got our Einstein Fellows. You all met Lynn Reed, who is still working out at NSF and has great projects on her plate. This year, we actually got a kind of a bump in applications from community college teachers. That's another thing that NSF has been looking for. And, of course, our amazing informal educators that we have, and you guys have all met Alex Eilers and a few others. So in terms of those products of what's behind us and what the future can look like, we've got over 100 lessons developed. So you guys are welcome to dive into those or share them with others. We've got those live events, and actually we just scheduled one with Brian Dubay. He is in Antarctica right now, and he is holding an event on December 2nd. I'll send out an email about that in a while. And it has to do with the research they're doing as well as Antarctica Day. That's the 1st of December, and it celebrates the peaceful treaty and scientific efforts in Antarctica. So that's a great event coming up real soon. 82% of the people who participate in these live events do it for the very first time and then are following expeditions beyond that. And you guys are always, always welcome to do more live events if you want, even if you're already out of the field. Lots of visits to the website and lots of partnerships. So we're working with NASA again on the Ice Bridge project. And Mark says hello. He couldn't make it to this, but he says hi. So that's just a little bit of what we have and hopefully what you guys are contributing to over time. And really, that's kind of our quick little piece about just Polar Trek in general. And I'm going to turn it over to you guys in a second to be able to share what you were doing in terms of implementing into the classroom, your experience, kind of a brief overview of what your experience is like, and then outreach and lesson plans and highlights that you want to share. And we have about 50 more minutes, and so I want to give everybody at least 5 minutes to talk, and then we'll kind of wrap it up at the end. And researchers that are present will kind of call on you as we go down the list of teachers in their slides, and you guys can just kind of comment and talk about more collaborations that might be in the future. So here's our lovely group of people. So we keep this flyer right on our desk all year round, watching you guys head out into the field, hoping to do everything we can to support you. And I just went through our pictures this afternoon and added a few of you guys at orientation. So thanks for a great time up here in Fairbanks. And we'll have our next orientation actually in February, so it might be a little bit colder for this next group. So our first slides are actually with Jamie. So Jamie, I'll kind of turn it over to you, and when you're ready to go to the next slide, I can move it for you, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. In the chat box, can folks hear Jamie?
This is Jamie from Coeur d'Alene. Okay, I see you. Yup. All right, great.
Go ahead, Jamie.
So I put this nice, well, first off, hi, everybody. My goodness, I wish I could see you all. But the relationship that we've all made, I think we all know is pretty special and maybe a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So it's so nice to connect with you all again. This picture I put up here first is from one of the only sunny days that we had while I was there. And so I thought it was a good one to put up as the first picture because it really sheds light on the true beauty of the Glacier Mulejökull where we were. So next slide, please. So in the field, we worked hard. We were up and at it pretty early in the morning, and we came back relatively late in the afternoon or early evening almost every day. And I got to help out in all sorts of work that was going on. This project team involved scientists from Iowa State University, that's Neil Iverson, and from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, that's Tom Hoyer, as well as a group of international scientists from across a bunch of different Nordic countries, Iceland, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. And so I got to do a lot of digging. First off, we had to access glacial till or glacial sediment called till that was undisturbed, and so we had to dig down into the drumlins, and sometimes that digging was pretty laborious and required a lot of work. So we did a lot of digging. I lost a little weight and beefed up my biceps and my arm muscles a little bit. In that lower left-hand corner, you can see a lot of digging going on. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a photo of a day that I helped out with the Swedish Arctic Research Program, or SWEDARP. And I worked with Anders and Ivar for a day working with glacial ice margin profiling. So the little metallic triangle there has been in place on the glacier since 2008, I believe. And they've been monitoring the recession of the glacier since then, every summer or every other summer, And it's really pretty simple using some standard surveying equipment. This is some of the raw data that I brought home, and my students have been able to graph the horizontal and vertical components of the data, and they've been able to graphically determine the rate of recession of Mulejoki since 2008, which is over 150 meters in recession. It's really pretty neat stuff. The kids are really impressed with it. In the lower right-hand corner, you'll see another activity I helped out with a lot. We did a lot of ground-penetrating radar work to try to access macro structures in the strata of the till. And this is really important because Neil and Tom are trying to determine if the drumlins are formed by deposition of till or if they're formed by erosion of till. And so the team so kindly, well, Luke especially kind of referenced me as his donkey, his mule. And I pulled the radar for hours a day, for about 3 hours. I ate a lot of Snickers bars to make up for the lost calories. And in the upper left-hand corner, you can see Neil and I for the Polar Connect event, speaking into the satellite phone in the cook tent, trying to connect with all of our students. So it was just an awesome experience. It was very, very windy, but we had a wonderful time. Next slide, please. All right. So here you can see a little bit of the outreach that I've been conducting. Since I've been back home, I've been doing quite a bit of outreach. I've spoken at, I've delivered talks, at the local, two other local high schools here in town at Coeur d'Alene to talk about the scientific method in the field and just how geoscientists differ in their use of the scientific method compared to more laboratory-based sciences. We also delivered a talk. I spent last week out in Ames and Milwaukee working with Neil and Tom in the lab. And I was fortunate enough to help them deliver a talk at the Science Center of Iowa. And on the right, you'll see a little lesson that I developed for the audience where they kinesthetically explored the different drumlin formation hypotheses. On the left, you'll see a picture of all the community members and the students that showed up to our Polar Connect event while we were still in the field. Next slide, please. Or is that it? I think that's it, actually.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Unless you want to talk for Andrea.
No, that's it. Okay, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, Jamie, that was great. Bruce is asking about new AP or IB environmental science labs you've come up with, if any. And maybe you're on mute and talking to us.
Yes. No, I think I realize that. Yeah, the ice margin profile is a really nice one that I have used in the IB class to show environmental change or changes in environmental systems. And I also came up with a little deal on primary succession that we observed at Mulejoki. So Bruce, if you teach any bit about primary succession, we were basically camped in the middle of a zone of primary succession. And I can show you some pictures and some other information about that.
Cool. Thanks, Jamie. All right. So I'm going to actually turn it over to Andrea. And Andrea, do you have your mic working?
Yes. We first started our sampling in the Bering Strait to sample. And then when we got on site, we averaged about two sites a day. It's two stations a day. And at each station, for my particular job, as you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, is a kind of looks like a slide. And it was specially designed to put sediments on there. And then at the end of the slide is a sieve that we would take organisms out. And this particular one, we did three samples of mud about this size for a quantitative study, and another bucket of mud or tub of mud was used for qualitative to do isotope, heavy and light carbon and nitrogen isotopes. The bottom corner just shows a view of what it looked like on the back deck up two decks above. And you could see all the ice and why we need an icebreaker. And this particular one, I think they were setting up for bongo nets there at the bottom. And on the left side, what you see is I'm wearing a Mustang suit. So anytime that you're out on the back deck, you must wear a Mustang suit and steel toe boots. So we probably did about 80 to 90 samples for that. And the Dutton team, basically they did everything on the ship from the water chemistry plankton all the way to taking samples from the trawl. So they did the whole gamut of everything. My job was the sediments. And if you wouldn't mind switching to the next slide. And so what we were basically doing is the physical, biological, and chemical parameters of Hannah Shoal and seeing why in the world is this place such a biological hotspot of productivity. It was just amazing all the things that we did. Up at the upper right-hand corner, you'll see we actually got off the boat on the Zodiac and collected ice. And why ice? Well, at the interface of the ice and the water is sea ice algae, which is a diatom that's specially adapted, and only about 8% of the plankton is this particular type of diatom. So we were actually collecting. And then the bottom right-hand corner is the Healy itself, 420-foot-long icebreaker. And the picture in the center is, like Jamie had said, it's mostly cloudy in these areas, so it was very lovely to have a very sunny day. Besides me doing the sampling, what my other job was to journal and ask questions of the other scientists on board, the chemists, the oceanographers. That's about it, and I tried to put it in the best that I could. Oh, let me talk to you a little bit about my outreaches. I've done two outreaches, and I discuss things like location, the science itself, and then I go into a little bit about the animals and the beauty of this particular area and how it's been pristine. And the reason why this baseline study was done is that oil and gas want to do observations, drilling in this area. So it's nice to have a baseline for numerous reasons to know how the area was at the beginning, and if for some reason something should happen, if it ends up being anthropogenic, that something happens, they know what they can do, where can they concentrate their efforts, because they've studied the flow of the ocean, the currents. And so that was very interesting. That's it.
Cool. Thanks, Andrea. That was great. And the next one in our list is Bruce. I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Sarah. Hi, everyone. So I think I had the expedition that had the most confusing title. But what I want to do, kind of explain what we were doing up at Tulik, and it was fun being up there because I got to overlap with Alicia for a couple of days, and I was up there with Nell. For most of the time and got to work with her and Amanda too, which was really great. But my expedition was about trying to figure out what's going on with the permafrost that's melting in the Arctic. There's a huge amount of carbon stored up in the Arctic permafrost. The Arctic is warming. So the big question is, what's going to happen to all that carbon? And the team I was working with has been working up at Tulik for decades trying to build a model of what's happening to carbon as it's released from thawing permafrost. And these two pictures at the top here, Lake I-8 Inlet and Lake I-8 Outlet, kind of summarize the whole expedition. You can see from the Lake I-8 Inlet that the water is flowing into this lake off of the tundra with lots of sediment, dissolved organic matter from melting permafrost, and flowing into Lake I-8. And when it flows out, it's perfectly clear. So kind of the question of my expedition was, what happened to all that brown stuff that flowed into the lake? So if you look in the three pictures in the bottom left here, we were basically going all over the tundra from the Brooks Range to the Arctic Ocean, sampling soil water, sampling streams, sampling ponds, sampling gases coming off of little ponds and lakes, like I'm doing in that little picture down in the bottom left, sampling the amount of light intensity in the water column in rivers, and trying to figure out what's happening to that organic matter in the water. So the team I was working with was doing just a tremendous amount of sampling and chemical analysis, trying to kind of put a flow model together to figure out, is this stuff settling down in sediment? Is it just flowing out into the ocean? Or are biological processes converting this dissolved CO2 or this dissolved organic matter into carbon dioxide that's going to build up greenhouse gases? So that's kind of the overall purpose of my expedition. And at the bottom right here, you can see what I did was I created a couple of labs that I'm trying to set up in my class to kind of model what we've done, what we did up at Tulik. So at the bottom, there's a picture of samples from local waters. Some have more dissolved organic matter kind of tannins in them than others. So I'm trying to teach my students what's happening to that dissolved organic matter as well. And the little picture with the rainbow there is we're running these samples of organic waters through spectroscopes or spectrophotometers and colorimeters too to try to see how much light they're absorbing as the dissolved organic matter decays. So it's kind of an exercise to get the point across to them that natural waters contain dissolved organic matter, that microbes are busy breaking that stuff down, and that has important implications to the Earth's carbon cycle. And that's about as much detail as I want to go into on that now. So those are kind of in development right now, and I'm working on them in the classroom and continuing to work with my research team up in Michigan on it too. So that's been kind of fun follow-up from the field. The next slide here is a summary of the outreach. I've had a couple of newspaper articles placed. Last month I was at the New Jersey Science Teachers Convention. I'm going down to the Barack Obama Green Charter High School, where my wife teaches soon, to try to explain to her students what I was doing. And the last bullet's the really fun one. About a week or two ago, Alicia Nell and I found out that our abstract was accepted for the National Science Teachers Convention in Boston in April. So the three of us will be out there giving a talk on our Tulik experiences. And the one other thing I want to say is I just got these two gigs for the Morris County Library and the Mendham Township Library for January and February. And when I got back, I went around to all the local libraries and tried to get them to book me for a presentation. And they basically ignored me, so I'd been sitting around for a few months kind of wondering why they weren't interested. And then just about a week or two ago, both of them called me and said, hey, we want to book you for a talk. So sometimes it just needs a little patience to wait for those guys to come around. So that's about it right now.
Cool. Thanks, Bruce. And another kind of addendum in our world to Rose is applying, Rose Corey and his Bruce's research team are applying for another teacher and kind of building this whole project where hopefully it's kind of building a whole curriculum based on their research with Bruce and with a new teacher, and so we're looking forward to that too. All right, our next person is Alicia.
Hey, everybody. I'm feeling kind of self-conscious about my slides now, not as picture-heavy as everybody else's. But you all have seen how adorable the Arctic ground squirrels are. You've held them, so I don't have to show you cute pictures of them. Basically, we were out at Tulik Field Station. I was there with Corey Williams and Jeanette Moore, and we had an REU student, an undergrad student named Kate Wilsterman, join us. That was a great surprise, and it was really fun to meet her and work with her as well. And we were studying the circadian rhythms of Arctic ground squirrels. So we spent a lot of time wandering around the tundra with squirrel traps and trapping squirrels and wrangling squirrels with light collars and ear tags and fun things like that. The squirrels have been of great interest to my students back at my school, so that's been a very easy buy-in. I got to come back with lots of bones and cool things that my kids are very excited to see. So one of the first lessons I've kind of made the rounds around my school teaching, gosh, I've probably taught the same lesson about 16 times now, is about what makes an effective scientist. And I'm using videos of Corey and Brian and some of the other scientists that I got to work with out at Helix, talking about why they became scientists, what they liked about it, advice for kids who want to go into science. And the kids are really, really excited about that. We've seen a lot of kind of passion about science that we haven't seen before, so that's been great. Corey's been awesome to send me lots of squirrel data that he's kind of pared down to a more reasonable level for my students, and I'm working on a way to best organize that and use that with my kids. I'm finding that what I thought would be one lesson is more like 6 or 7, so I'm working on the best way to arrange that. As far as outreach goes, I found that some of the simplest things within my school are the most effective. Like we have a bulletin board set up in the hallway where the kid, there's pictures of my Arctic experiences, and the kids walk by and post questions and what they notice and what they wonder. We've used our morning announcements to kind of share information about those pictures when I'm getting ready to change them out or reveal what they actually were. And I've done some presentations for my teachers over lunch, kind of marketing what I can do for their classrooms, how it fits, how my Arctic experiences fit with their curriculum. That's been good. Used our district and site newsletters quite a bit, just little articles about what I did in the Arctic and what I learned and how that relates to our students. So that's been good. Can you go to the next slide, Sarah? So that's that bulletin board that I was telling you about. So it's just something very simple. I have been able to go to a couple other districts in my area and do presentations for their kids. They're teachers that I just know in other places that asked me to come and teach their kids. I did a presentation a couple weeks ago at the Oklahoma Science Teachers Conference. We got some local media, newspaper, and that kind of stuff. Just found out that there's a Women in Science Conference coming to my area soon that I'm sending a group of kids to, and they I contacted them, and they're going to let me kind of have a booth in the teacher area to talk about Polar Trek and how teachers can actually get involved in science, in particular women. So that's pretty exciting. And Bruce already told you about our NSPA excitement. So it's been really great bringing all the pictures and the excitement back to my kids. It seems like every day I've got kids coming up and asking more questions and wanting more lessons in their class. And you guys know I have kind of an unusual position where I work with all kinds of teachers and students in the school. So I think I've been able to connect with almost all 650 kids in my school related to Arctic ground squirrels and polar regions. So that's pretty cool. Bruce, the Women in Science Conference is here at Oklahoma. It's put on by an Oklahoma Science Group. So, yeah, pretty exciting. So I think that's kind of the basics for me.
Hey, Felicia. I know we have Corey on here. Corey, if you want, you can grab the microphone and just comment on what you've seen Alicia been doing and what it looks like from the researcher side and how that went.
Well, it went really well from our point of view. Alicia was great in the field with us, and she got along really well with the undergraduate student that we had who was funded through the National Science Foundation. And recently, we've mostly been collaborating by trying to pare down some data sets and try and make 10,000 data points into 10 data points, so it's more manageable for kids. And yeah, it's just worked out tremendously.
Awesome. Thanks, Corey. And it looks like Carol is up next. Carol, does your mic work today? All right, looks like it's working, is it? Yep. Great. Hello, everyone. So I was up in northern Finland. The center top little picture you can see is the peninsula out into Kevalyarvi, which is Kivalik, and the research station sits right on that peninsula. And one of my favorite places to go was walk up the peninsula, so be to the right in that picture. and you end up right up on Puxa where the background picture is taken. So I'm looking straight north in the background picture to the Norwegian border. So I was really far north in Finland. You can get a feel for the country there, which is pretty different from the equivalent latitude in Alaska, which is just a little bit south of Barrow. And that's why Kim Miller, my researcher from San Diego State, had a project there, is because the wetlands in northern Finland are very different from the wetlands in northern Alaska, where she's worked, in Barrow, actually. She was doing a comparison study of carbon dioxide and methane emissions from these different types of wetlands. So the place itself was totally awesome. And I had probably a very different experience from most people who go out in the field, because Kivo is a wonderful place to live, very well set up. Top right is the dining hall kind of gathering area. It is in Lapland. The Sami are the only indigenous peoples of Europe, and northern Finland, along with, Western Russia, Norway, Sweden, Lapland stretches over the whole of it. So the reindeer, as in the top left, were wandering all over the place. You had to make very sure you didn't hit any on the highway or anything. But so I learned a little of the culture, too. But I was on a team of two people, just myself and the researcher. I knew that going in, and I knew that was going to be very different from any other experiences I've had. We made up our own team. But the wonderful thing about living at the research station was there were other people there doing other projects. And in the bottom center left, you see two Finns. That's Lowry on the left and Haiti on the right, setting up an enclosure for the moth study. This area, and actually northern Scandinavia in general, they have these infestations of what are called autumnal moths that absolutely, completely denude all the birches, the Koivu Tinturi, the mountain birches there. And if that happens several years in a row, the trees will die. They just won't come back anymore. So I learned a lot about other projects going on in this area, which really, really helped me out because, and I knew this ahead of time too, going in, as Kim warned me, research days are very boring and very slow, which is kind of, again, contrary to what I think of in terms of research. But on the other hand, those are the days we really sat down and talked through the chemistry of what's going on with these gas emissions. And the other one other nice thing about the research station and was learning about Finland and the people overall, and the fact that you hear about saunas in Finland all the time because they invented sauna. I had read that saunas were on Thursdays and Saturdays, and I thought, oh, come on, they're scheduled for the whole country. I found out there's some truth to that, because ours were actually scheduled on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays, and they're totally awesome. Everywhere you go has a sauna. So that was pretty awesome, pretty fantastic. Plus, the weather was outrageously clear and warm. In fact, Kevo had the Northern European record one day. I think it hit what was the equivalent of 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And in fact, we were kind of dying in the heat. It was really, really hot and sunny. So we weren't complaining. Nobody was complaining, but it was truly a remarkable experience to be in that situation doing field research. So you can go to the next slide.
Sure. And Tom's wondering about bugs.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I wasn't keeping track of that. Yeah, there you go, scientist honest. Well, it wasn't by accident that I went really early in the season. And, of course, my main motivation was I left right before the last week of school in late May, May 18th, in fact, which was absolutely crazy to try and get out of school, you know, pack up everything, get a substitute lined out. It was nuts, but it was worth it because when I finally got there, took a long time to get there, I was able to Skype back into my classrooms. And that was just a fantastic experience. And the kids I've seen since then, and actually Jamie met one of my students down in Idaho who just said how awesome the Skype was. And I've met
students in town this year who goes, how was Finland? It was so cool seeing you on Skype. So it was really worth it. But of course it meant I missed the bugs. They, just like Alaska, they don't come out right away. And I had a whole month there in late May, early June. They were just starting to get a few bugs when I left. So totally aced the time frame as far as I was concerned. Although, you know, what can I say? I'm used to bugs. I did bring a headnet, but my researcher put it on. The first bug came out, she put on a headnet, which had me smiling, but it was great. It was fantastic weather. And I was also there for Green Up, which is really, as far as I'm concerned, special. It's one of my favorite times. There were almost no leaves. The buds were just bursting on the day I arrived. And within a couple of weeks, everything was totally green. It was really nice. Amanda, don't worry. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, so I've got the bug thing, the mosquito thing. So we did go into the field. PepsiCo is our field site there that's in the background where we have the boardwalks. And, of course, we had to collect our gas samples first because if you just don't want to disturb the wetland because you burp the gas out of it. So after we've done that, then we jump on the wetlands or go through the wetlands, we both did, to get the soil samples to analyze for what the microbes actually are that are releasing the gases. Because there are a lot of microbes in there. It just depends on which ones are active. In other words, what are the specific conditions at the time? And in fact, that was what Kim, my researcher, was focusing on after I left. You can see all the soil collars are in pairs. So what she did later on in the summer was she added iron to one of the pairs and just water solution to the other to see if that changed the emissions. And I've just found she just sent me some preliminary results which said that in Barrow, doing that appeared to suppress methane emissions. But in the Finland wetlands, which are much more hydrologically active and much more nutrient-rich than the Barrow soils, which are mineral-rich, it did not appear to suppress the methane in the Finland, but it did appear to suppress carbon dioxide emissions in the Finnish soils. So that's kind of interesting. The thing that totally caught me was the lab work, because I had anticipated the Polartrek was sort of the field work thing, and you go out there and you work. And after 10 days of that, the laser that analyzes gas immediately, you can hook a laser up to the soil collars and immediately read out the gas emissions. It just kept not coming. It was supposed to be there before I arrived, but it just wasn't coming. So we had to do this, pull it out with a needle, put it in a glass vial, and then take it to a gas chromatograph, which is an incredibly slow way of doing the same thing. Well, we ran out of vials because Kim didn't have enough because she was supposed to get the laser. So we couldn't collect any more samples, so we ended up on a six-hour drive south to Rovaniemi in Finland, where the lab was that, as you can see, the gas chromatograph there. And I spent 6 nights. I just had to rent an apartment by myself. Kim stayed with friends. So it was a really bizarre thing to work in a lab, just the two of us running these samples, and then I'd walk home and sit in this apartment by myself. So that was weird. But then we got back to Kevo, because now we had vials we could use, and the laser still hadn't come. Came the day after I left, actually. And we went back to collecting samples, and it was really cool, because another unexpected issue was that, it wasn't an issue, but Kim's sister was visiting for my first 10 days in Kevo, so Kim really wasn't into the science part of it, except for field days. But when we got back, the sister had left, and Kim was totally into science, and we had an absolute blast for those last 10 days. You know, getting into as much of Kim's research as I could, and also asking questions of the other researchers in Kevo because more people were turning up. As for outreach, let's see. There'll be a lesson on litter bags, way to measure decomposition that'll be posted, which I haven't done yet. I did present at the Anchorage Math and Science Conference a little while ago. It wasn't a big conference, but it was still pretty cool. I'll be going to the Alaska Geophysical Union in San Francisco in December. I have a poster to present there. And I'll meet up with Tim as well, my researcher down there. And then we just got word that we will be presenting in Fairbanks in January for the Science for Alaska series, which is usually a very well-attended series for the general public. And that's kind of a pretty big deal. The ones I've been to, the rooms have always been packed. And when I contacted them, they took a while to get back with me because they had only wanted Geophysical Institute scientists this time. But when I pitched it as, hey, this is a local teacher plus a scientist from outside who's done comparative research with Alaska and it's a global issue, they kind of got psyched about it. So that's pretty neat, sort of still putting that together. I don't have science this year. I'm not in the classroom at the moment, but putting together essentially climate change science, although I'm calling it Earth System Science, a class and a program for students, both in Fairbanks, and I'm also looking into how to put it online to work more with this.
Cool. Thanks, Carol. That was great. And I think it looks like Tom is next. Go ahead, Tom. All right. Looks like it'll work now, Tom. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, all. I don't know about you, but I'm sitting here. I just can't. I can't help smiling. It's great to hear your voices. So I had the fortunate opportunity to work with Elizabeth, who's the center picture there, Elizabeth Webb out of the University of Florida. You remember her from the training conference in Fairbanks. She came and talked about measuring carbon dioxide with the LIGHTCOR, and I ended up spending quite a bit of time with that nice machine. So you can see in the center there, I left some graffiti at Isabella Coal Mine, which was across the Parks Highway from our research site. Hope it stays there a while. So in the upper left-hand corner there, that's a picture of the winter research at the fences, and we were measuring carbon and permafrost experimental heating. So I'm standing on the heating side of the fence, heated by snow cover. We're measuring snow depth in preparation for snow removal. You can see the series of pictures across the bottom there. I spent a week doing that. On the upper right-hand side, I had the opportunity to come back to the research site in the beginning of August and spend a few days there looking at the summer measurements and helping out. And the lower left-hand corner and right-hand corner are data collection. My experience was excellent. I had originally applied to Polartrek, feeling I needed to experience some type of field research, and that's exactly what I got, and it was great. Next slide, Sarah. So what was important, I think, overall for me, and one of the successes was making connections. Starting in the center at the top there, that's the basic team during snow removal week, and I was able to make connections with the primary investigator, Ted Scheer, in the center there. Actually, he can't really be in the center since there's a six there, but he's the right, thanks. So, and next to him, Elizabeth Webb, the researcher whom I worked with, And next to her is the site manager, Kirsten Koh, who I got to spend some time with. And on the far right-hand side, John Kropik, the field tech, whom I got to be pretty good friends with. On the far left-hand side, former field tech, Catherine, and next to her, Verity Salmon, a researcher looking at nitrogen cycling. So some nice connections there. In the upper right-hand corner, I had the opportunity to meet and set up some potential future research opportunities with Vladimir Romanovsky, who runs the permafrost lab at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I was able to visit him in August and looking at potentially going back and working with him placing thermocouples and boreholes this next summer. Moving down from him on the right-hand side, Elizabeth Knight is part of our outreach. We're able to spend some time in a science teacher's classroom in Fairbanks. Jim does pretty much the same thing I do, teaching high school science, earth science and anatomy and physiology. Of course, another important connection was with you all at the training conference there. And then down in the corner, Jamie Hollinsworth, the site manager for the Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest, which is a long-term ecological survey. And that was, I got to spend a day with him and look over what he did. As far as outreach, in the center on the bottom there, I had the opportunity to do a presentation to my district teachers, staff, and administrators when I came back to school in August. And I've had an article about professional development in a local newspaper, and presentations to my science classes and other science classes in our science department at the high school. Another nice connection is the location of the research site was off the Stampede Trail in Healy, and connections I think are important, particularly in science and students who have potentially a marginal interest in it. And students in our English department at Bellows Tree Academy in Fairfax were reading Into the Wild last year, and it was kind of nice that I was in the area and was able to get out to bus 142 with our research team and bring the pictures and blog about that back to our school. On the middle, on the left-hand side, what I thought was important in my research experience was being a viable member of the research team, and thanks to Elizabeth, she really went a long ways to integrating me into the team. When I came back in the summer, I spent a day building boardwalks, and you can see, Carol, that they're definitely not as substantial as what you had there in Finland, but hopefully when I come back in a few years, they'll still be there. And last of all, in the upper corner there, the Mike and Corrine, the individuals who own the cabin that the research team stayed at, ran dogs, and in Alaska, mushing has a long history, and though growing up there, I had never actually spent any time with them, and we were able to, Mike used them to get firewood, so very utilitarian use, so it was pretty cool connection to the mushing history in Alaska also. So one of the challenges, and I'm sure Ken can is familiar with this, was keeping dry, particularly my feet and my hands. And one of the surprises I had was having never been on a research team before, though a lot of athletic teams, it really surprised me how important the team dynamics were to the overall research effort, and that's something I will remember and bring back to my classroom. And like I said before, one of the successes I felt was making these connections to researchers, to other teachers such as yourselves, and to students across the board. So thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Those boardwalks are sturdy. You did a good job. And actually, it's a good segue into Ken because his slides are next. And unfortunately, my computer's being a little funny, so let me see if I can just get to the next slide. Okay.
So,
Ken, it should be your
hi,
slide.
Everybody. So, I'll actually, this is really fun, actually. It's good to hear everybody. So, I'll start with outreach. So, I've actually certainly did student outreach. I did a school board meeting. Seth and I actually went over to New Hampshire one weekend night over the summer and did a presentation for the University of New Hampshire's Sustainability Institute. And one of the professors on the trip was actually part of that institute. I did a small professional development committee at school, did a teacher workshop day. In January, the two of us actually have a presentation at our public library, which is called Chats with Champions, and I guess it's really well attended, although I actually haven't been to one myself. And then one of the biggest outreaches for me was actually kind of neat because I had a big we had a big article in the Maine Educator, which is the teachers union newspaper that actually goes out to about 25,000 people in the state of Maine and all around the country, depending on retiree subscriptions and everything. So that was actually pretty cool. And there was a local newspaper article as well. So there's been a sort of a lull as Seth is trying to work his PhD finalization, but that'll segue into classroom stuff because we have not done anything together in the classroom yet, although we have plans out there as far as modeling glacier movement with kids with this sort of flubber product that he uses. We'll actually be gathering climate data from the live-time, real-time Met station that's actually up on the Hunter Ice Divide where they did their ice core work. So students will have access to actual weather data. And I guess we'll stop there as far as classroom stuff. It's mostly in the planning stages at the moment. So I'll jump to this slide. So when I've been doing outreach, first slide, Sarah. So when I start outreach stuff, this is the slide I start with because that's basically what it's all about. So if you look at the stars, so the star on the right is right over Seth's chest. So he's the research scientist that actually occupied space in this classroom. So he's back. That was this past spring before we went out in the field. And then the two other stars, there's a star on a blonde girl named Tally and another star on a guy named Dakota. So looking at this picture, most of those kids have been on backpacking trips with me, including Seth went on his very first trip. So this year, Dakota's older brother actually chaperoned the trip. And Tally also had a family member chaperoning with her on this trip, too. So it's just really coming full circle for me. And I'm one of my big goals would be to maintain this full circle aspect as these kids just grow into what I hope is going to be, science fields. So for me, it's totally about the relationships built among and between people and about place as far as Denali National Park, because that was just mind-bending cool. I mean, I just had this amazing 3 weeks on the glacier with this whole team. Certainly about adventure, and then about science, although I actually didn't get to do much of the science because Seth and the science team took over the blog once they moved up to the Hunter Ice Divide. So now we can segue into that second slide, Sarah, and I'll jump on some pictures there. So the upper left is sort of how I bring the themes of place back into the whole outreach stuff here. So that's basically what we did on the Kahiltna Glacier. And if you look in lower right on that picture, KIA is actually the Kahiltna International Airport, which is where planes land on the glacier. And then we tracked all the way up that red line. And if you sort of go to where it makes a hard right and climb up a little bit, there's a little bubble there that says me. I don't know if Sarah can point to that little. Yeah, so that's where I ended up at the high point up to Kahiltna Glacier. And if you then go down to the lower left, that's basically Seth and me up at that point, the two of us up there on a fixed on a rope team with another person with us taking the picture. So that's pretty much where we ended up. And then if you go to the lower right, which brings the theme of adventure to it, that's just a picture this is just one of my favorite pictures, just moving up the glacier above the clouds on a rope team, just looking out into the far, far beyond there. And then eventually we will get to the science, although we don't have any science yet because they're still working on the ice core analysis at the Ice Core Laboratory in Colorado. But that upper right picture is the farthest point of that core that was down 750 feet into the Hunter Ice Divide down to bedrock. So they're sort of thinking that that piece of ice is about 1,000 years old or so that will then lead into their climate study analysis. So I think I'm pretty much done, except for the fact that I think it would be pretty much of a cool deal if we all ended up in Boston at that National Science Teachers Association conference. So I'm going to get it on my calendar and save my professional days and go hang out with folks in Boston. I think that sounds like a really good time in April. So Red Sox tickets are hard to get, though, just so you know. So with that, I think I'll turn it over to the next person.
Thanks, Ken. That was perfect. All right, and we have Team Spider. Go ahead, Nell.
Hi, everyone. It's Nell. Sorry, I totally procrastinated, so I think I'm the last person. So I will try to keep it short so that you guys can get out of here. But you guys all know that I was working with the Spider up at Tulik with Amanda Cole, who is on this call as well, and our research assistant, Kiki Contreras. So you can actually go to the, well, you know what, the lower right-hand corner, that is a female wolf spider with her egg sac. And the top right-hand, that's just a wolf spider that Kiki took a picture of on a little piece of snow. But you can go to the next slide, Sarah. So basically, what Amanda was looking to see is how the wolf spider has been impacted by global climate change, but then also how the microbial soil layer and the microbial community and the detritivores are changing because of temperature changes and also the spider's effect on the food web. Because basically, as Bruce was saying earlier, you know, with all this stored carbon in the permafrost, as the permafrost melts, the carbon is released, all of these little organisms that are in the soil are then releasing more and more carbon into the atmosphere through respiration. And then so how is that impacting all of the organisms, but in particular, what is the role the wolf spider is playing? You can go to the next slide, Sarah. So Amanda was actually up there for 3 years. This summer was her last year up there. So she had these pits set up for, let's see, there were, Amanda, you can jump in anytime. There were like, I think there were 20 pitfalls, not pitfalls, I'm sorry, 20 of these little mesocosms. Some were under warm conditions, some were under normal conditions. But basically, the soil was sampled every at the beginning of each season and the end of each season. And then, which you can see in the upper right-hand corner, that's a soil sample taken from one of the mesocosms. And they had different levels of spiders in them as well. And so then the soils were dried out with release funnels. In the lower right, you can also see that we have litter bags as well. And so basically, Amanda is now doing the really hard job of sitting in her lab for 8 to 10 hours every single day with a microscope, going through every single dried out soil sample to see what microorganisms are living in those. So she's still working on all of her research. She's working on her PhD now and trying to get her research done before another team, hopefully. So we haven't actually done that much data analysis with my students because she's still analyzing the data herself. You can go to the next slide. That might be my only slide. I don't think I have a next one. Oh, I do have a next one. So one of the things that happened while Amanda was doing her research is she realized that there were some other neat things happening with the wolf spider. In particular, there are wasps that lay their eggs, or their larvae rather, inside the spider's egg sac. So if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you can see again, there's that female wolf spider with her egg sac attached. And so Amanda started looking at latitudinal changes with these egg sacs to see as you went further south or further north, did the number of wasp parasites change in those egg sacs. So that was kind of a secondary project that she started in her 3 years at Tulik. And it actually ended up being really exciting for her, and I think it was almost more exciting than her primary project. So we collected a lot of female spiders. In the lower right-hand corner, those are our spider mansions. And those had living spiders in them. Before I left, we did have one mother birth her spiders. So we were really excited about that. But Amanda is continuing that research right now. As far as outreach goes, you know, I've done some stuff in my classroom with my lessons. Amanda and Kiki were trying to get out to my classroom in November, but it didn't happen. But it is going to happen in the spring for sure. And Paula Dell and I, who is in the Antarctic, she and I are putting together workshops for the Museum of Science and Industry here in Chicago, teacher workshops to help with delivering environmental science content in an inquiry focus in middle school classrooms. And then, as Bruce and Alicia said, we will be in Boston doing some sort of presentation, which, you know, we don't know what it is yet, but we'll figure that out for April, hopefully. And that's pretty much it.
Great. Thanks, Nell. That was perfect. And Amanda, I'll open the mic up to you if you want to comment on kind of that collaboration and where you're at.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Okay,
I'll keep going. Yeah, this was it was wonderful to have Nell in the field. This was actually the second year in a row that I've had a Polar Trek teacher, and both of them have been really different, and I've learned really different things from each of them. So Nell and I had a great experience. She got to see everything that we do. She didn't have to spend too much time at the scope, but you know, hopefully she went away with a better experience and, you know, with her eyes intact. So, I'm processing the samples now, and I'll be visiting Nell's classes in the spring, and so everything will be processed by then, and so it'll be really exciting for the students to be able to look at the data. And something that Nell and I have been talking about is having her students learn how to interpret and analyze the data, but also how to ask follow-up questions, because, of course, the research is never over, and once you answer one thing, it opens up more questions than you originally had. I guess that's it. Everything went super well. I'm actually going to Tulik in a couple weeks, the second week of December, and so Nell and I are also trying to set up some kind of webinar so that I can Skype from Tulik in the winter with her students. So if any of the rest of you are interested in that, please let me know. So, yeah, thank you. Oh.
Terrific. Cool. Well, let us know if we can help with the webinar, too. All right. Thanks, guys. I'm just going to kind of wrap it up here. That was really, really wonderful to hear from you all. And, you know, Janet for sure put so much work into the project and all the team here at ARCUS, and it's just really wonderful to hear all these amazing and incredibly unique ways that you're all using your projects. I mean, it's incredible. So just a reminder that we have some folks in Antarctica, so Paul is already gone. And as an update to everybody, because of the shutdown, Yomini is not going to Antarctica this year. So her project got canceled, but we talked to her yesterday, and the hope is that they'll be going next winter. And so hopefully they'll be going sort of next October, November, so that's the hope. I know, it's a huge bummer, but somehow, luckily, everybody else was able to go. So Justin Kenthammer and Brian Dubay are down on the ice now. Obed leaves in a little bit, and Glenn is kind of in the new year. So definitely use your students and head out there to their expedition pages and help them out and stay connected with those Antarctic folks, too. They have a smaller group than our Arctic folks, so help them out. So in terms of staying connected,
you guys will see, as teachers, you'll see kind of alumni surveys in the future. We'll have our student survey coming out, too, while I'm mentioning some of our evaluation pieces. The student survey is the same as the one taken this fall. You'll see it at the end of the year and just have those same students take that again. And again, those expedition pages, you are welcome to use your page as much as you'd like. If you want to do journals on your outreach, Jamie did a couple of really good journals on his outreach efforts, and so those are a really good model to follow. Keep posted with us on Facebook, with Polar Trek and with Polar Educators International. There's a lot going on there. I have to be honest, Janet and I are terrible tweeters. We just don't know how to tweet. So we will try and tweet. And if you want to tweet for Polar Trek, let us know. But otherwise, check us out on Facebook for the social networking piece. And just like Bruce and everybody headed to, I guess everybody now, headed to National Science Teachers Association meetings and other meetings. Keep us posted on what you need for travel requests. And let's see, I'm trying to think of all the other pieces we have. In terms of lessons, a lot of you have already turned them in. Thank you so much for that. For folks who are still working on lessons, part of it is that we know, like, data's coming in from research teams and you're working on them. So if there's just a chance for you to put final touches on those, you all aren't waiting on data or whatever it might be, send those off to us and we'll get them up on the website. And one last piece, if anybody has extra ideas or needs or questions at this point, let me know and then I'll let you guys go. Yeah, people are saying in the chat box, life-altering 8 months. Professionally and personally. Amazing group, and this is great. Thank you, guys. Anybody have a question or not? I'll kind of be quiet for just a minute and let you guys think if there's anything you need from us at this moment. All right. I think what I'll do is cut and paste that last piece of the chat box in an email for Janet so she can see it. But we'll have this whole webinar archived and available. I will send the link to all of you probably tomorrow or the next day so you have access to it if you need to refresh yourself on, like, what was Bruce doing or what is Nell out there doing, and keep connecting with each other. Thanks so much for hanging out. And it was really nice to chat with all of you. And just keep us posted. Connect with us whenever you need anything. And here's to another great year of Polar Trek Teachers. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.